Hi, this is Chris, and I am reading a 2004 edition of The Red Eye in Roscoe Village, and you, my friend, are listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine, but you knew that.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's wonderful to be here with you today for show number 982. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer today in the WGN radio studio. And I think we're in need of some good news. You know, it's been a week, and I find myself saying that out loud more often these days, but I can't help it. I mean, there's a lot going on. Just this past week, we saw President Trump institute sweeping new tariffs targeting 66 countries, including our friends in Canada and the EU. Markets were all over the place because of this. And then Trump fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics because he didn't like the jobs report. Okay, I mean, it's like factual data here. And then Trump said he wants to restructure the census. This was after his plan to redraw congressional maps in Texas went before a special state legislative session. The goal was to give Republicans five more seats in the House of Representatives. And then Robert F. Kennedy Jr., probably the worst Kennedy, announced the withdrawal of $500 million in funding for mRNA research. That's research that can be used for the flu and COVID vaccines. According to the BBC, quote, the development of mRNA vaccines to target COVID-19 was critical in helping slow down the pandemic and saving millions of lives. That's according to Peter Lurie, a former U.S. Food and Drug Administration official. He told the BBC that the change was the U.S. turning its back on one of the most promising tools to fight the next pandemic, end quote. Okay, look, I'm not trying to be a downer on a Saturday morning, and maybe you can get behind some of this stuff, but yours truly cannot. We can't just make things up because it fits how we see the world. So I say all this because on the show today, we hear from people who are working with us to bring truth, from starting a small business around a passion for tea, to getting an update on Illinois civil rights history that we should all know, to learning about the story of an unsung musician from Chicago who was really into soul and funk and karate. Yep, karate. So the headlines might feel like a fever dream written by a committee of sci-fi writers and conspiracy theorists, but it's not the whole story. Because while the big stuff grabs attention, the good stuff, the real stuff, happens quietly. I'm reminded that the truth, creativity, and community still matter. And maybe that's the good news we've been waiting for. Let's get into it. I love coffee as much as the next guy, but I gotta give some love to tea. And there is a new tea company starting up, and right now they are selling tea out of their mobile trailer, and it's pretty cool. Earlier this week, I took my microphone to that trailer to River Forest right outside of Keystone Park. The company is called Joy Tea, and this is what it sounds like.
Coming into the trailer.
Hello. You want to try the milk tea? So it's less sweet, more focused on the tea flavor. We got a little interview going on here. This is...
Oh, I'm sorry. You're doing...
The cars are driving by us here on Lake Street and Keystone and River Forest, right outside of Keystone Park. And it's a nice day to have some tea. I'm just going to sip this. Oh my God, that's good. I'm here at Joy Tea with CEO and founder Max Blessin. This is a trailer. So we're literally in your trailer here, Max.
headquarters.
Your headquarters, which is mobile, I think is pretty cool. We're on Lake Street, so you're going to hear those cars whizzing by. Thanks for doing this today. Tell us, Joy Tea here. So I'm drinking this tea, and by the way, this is really, really good. What am I drinking here? What is this?
So what you're drinking is a 7-time scented jasmine green tea. It's one of the rarest teas on earth. It's made with over 40,000 freshly picked jasmine flowers. It takes about 500 hours to make. And what we did with that tea is we mixed it with some ruby red grapefruit to give you a citrusy, slightly tart, and super refreshing summer drink.
It is, I'm serious, it is so good. It's very refreshing and not overpowering, which I think is really nice. So, okay, Joy Tea, this is your business here. Like I said, this is a trailer. It's this very nice trailer that's on a hitch to a car. So you're mobile, you're in the Oak Park and River Forest area. Tell us about this business. What are you doing here? Why did you start it?
Yeah, so Joy Tea is... We make modern, fun, healthy, delicious drinks with ancient tea. The tagline is kind of ancient tea, modern drinks. We think tea is the perfect afternoon drink, and we think that tea in America has kind of been, it's given the short end of the stick. It's, you know, if you go to a cafe and you order tea, they basically just give you a bag with some hot water.
Right.
And it just does tea such an injustice. So in China, tea is one of the most popular drinks. It was invented there. They've been perfecting tea for over 5,000 years. And all we want to do is bring some of those amazing flavors over here, make fun, simple, modern drinks with them, and let people try them.
That's a really interesting point. I love tea, and I guess I've just been kind of the green tea with lemon and honey.
That's the thing. That's what most people are.
Yeah.
Most people, when they think about tea, they think black, green. Maybe if they're educated more in tea, they know oolong. Maybe they're into matcha. But within those categories, there's thousands of different varieties. And when I say China's been perfecting it, they've been crossbreeding, selectively breeding tea for thousands and thousands of years. So the flavors that they have over there are wildly different than anything here in America.
Okay, how do you do this here? Because I know there is a lot of effort on your part. You've got this trailer for Joy Tea, and it's mobile. We'll talk about that more in a second. But in terms of the preparation, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so prepping the tea is a lot of work. Basically, we steep the tea. We have a very precise method that we've developed. Every tea requires different steeping temperatures, times, and preparation methods to get the best flavor. So we dial all that in, we prepare the tea, and then we have this awesome kegerator system here. And if I open this up, you'll see we got 1/6 kegs in there tapped with nitrogen. So that's really important because we're purging the oxygen out of the environment. That keeps the tea fresh, and then when you drink it and then you expose it to oxygen, you let it breathe and you get some more of those flavors.
That's amazing, and I gotta be honest, I never thought about it. It's so detailed, like you have been, obviously, but really when I drink this tea that I'm currently sipping on here, you're right, it's like you get a lot of the nuance, which I feel like usually I just don't even realize.
It's very subtle.
I realize it with this.
Yeah, like Americans typically are very, you know, coffee's big here. And so we're very accustomed to these big, bold, combative flavors. Tea is the exact opposite. Tea is subtle, harmonious. These are flavors that you want to work together, that you don't want to overpower one another. So we're kind of like the antithesis to coffee in almost every respect. Our products are going to wake you up without making you feel jittery or anxious. Tea is one of the only proven drinks to lower cortisol. So our flavors, you know, unlike coffee that's bold and beautiful, ours are more subtle, nuanced, and harmonious. So we have a lot more freedom to make fun things like this grapefruit tea or future flavors coming up.
When you thought about doing this, why did you do it? I mean, obviously you love tea, but you saw that there is this kind of void. You do love tea.
It's my life.
you love it. But why would you do this? Because there is a void. We love coffee here in this country. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I think tea can sometimes be kind of like second fiddle.
Yeah.
So why did you want to do this?
Yeah, so we'll talk about that coffee thing first. I don't hate coffee. I drink coffee for a long time, but I think tea should play a bigger role in Americans' drink habits. Tea is the perfect afternoon drink. You'll never, at 3 p.m., you'll never go around and say, hey, I need a double shot espresso. It's kind of ridiculous.
Right.
But having a tea in the afternoon is the perfect way to kind of wind down your day, keep you energized, and keep you feeling great. The reason I'm doing this is because, I love tea. You know, I'm ethnically Chinese, so it's been very it's very culturally important to me. But I just think more people should drink more tea. They'd benefit from it. And the flavors are just so wonderful. I'm a sharer. I like sharing stuff. And I just want to share these flavors with more people. It's really, it brings me a lot of joy, which is kind of why, you know, it brings it to the name. But it's kind of a selfish thing. I just love sharing tea with people.
I'm glad you're doing it because you are helping out a lot of people. Hold on, you've got some customers here. You want to go ahead, help them. Let's help them. Yeah. Let's see what they want.
How are you guys? Is this your first time?
Yeah.
Give this a smell really quick because the aroma is phenomenal. All right. You guys are all set. Do you want to do cash or card? You're welcome.
All right, thanks.
So you are a tea expert here, clearly. You have been working in tea. What's your background? How do you know so much about tea?
Oh my God, I'm just obsessed. I think it's the best drink in the world. So I do a lot of research. I talk to a lot of people. I didn't start knowing this much. I actually lean a lot on farmers and purveyors of tea. I kind of see myself as an aggregator of knowledge. I'm not really an expert. I find all the important information and I package it up for our customers.
So Joy Tea right now, this is a trailer.
Yep.
And again, I want to emphasize, this is a very nice, new, clean kind of trailer. It's very cool and it's portable. So what's the idea here with the business model? You're going around Oak Park and River Forest primarily. What's the goal here?
So the vision is to be the Starbucks of tea. We think when people think coffee in America, they typically think Starbucks or Dunkin'. But when you say tea, it's kind of a, what is it? Like if I asked you, think about tea, think about a brand.
Oh man, I don't know. Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
It's highly fragmented. So, right. You know, so when you think about tea, we want you to think Joy. So we want to be the Starbucks of tea. We want to bring all these amazing teas to people and open up stores and just be available, convenient, create high quality products.
So the idea here is even though you're mobile, which I think is cool because you could go to different areas and kind of be where people are.
This is only the start, right?
It's the start. So you want to open up a store.
The trailer, the great thing about the mobile trailer is that we get to go to other people. And so we get to tell our story better than, you know, getting people to come to us. You know, we get to go to them, share our story, and actually share the product and the experience with people real time.
That's incredible. So the idea here is to keep the trailer going, get a store, but to be the Starbucks of tea. How have people been receiving this? Because you haven't been doing this for a terribly long time, right? So what's it been like, the response?
Oh, it's been overwhelming, really phenomenal. So when I first started, I was a little bit hesitant because we're introducing some newer flavor profiles to people. But I mean, so the thing I'm really focused on is making a product that makes people say, wow. This is a thesis I've had for a long time. If you can make someone say, wow, they're going to remember you. And so when we crafted our products, we really wanted to make sure that on your first sip, you had a physical reaction, a wow, a whoa, a oh my God. And yeah, so the reaction has been, wow, whoa, oh my God, that's phenomenal. Yeah, and so I think we're doing the right thing. I think we're on the right track. We're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep trying to make teas that make you say, wow. And you'll see me doing this forever.
I love your enthusiasm. I love the product. It's really, really good. So if we are wanting to know more about Joy Tea, to go online, what's the best thing we can do here?
Definitely follow us at Joy Tea USA on Instagram. We'll have a website soon, but the Instagram is the best way to keep updated. And then just stop by and say hello and try some tea and we'll see what you think.
Yeah, that's how I found you on Instagram. And I'm just going to have some more of this. This is, what's it called again? The jasmine?
The grapefruit jasmine green tea.
Hold on.
Perfect for summer.
Oh, so good. It really is good. All right, so Joy Tea USA on Instagram. That's where we can find Joy Tea. We should all check it out. And then you right now have a schedule, so you're not... every day of the week, you're in a different place around Oak Park and River Forest, and that's kind of the schedule for now, right?
Yeah, so we got some stalkers. We got people that follow us around. So, yeah, we're mobile, but we're mobile, you know, in certain spots. So we want people to build a ritual. We want them to come back. And so you'll be able to follow our schedule, see where we are, and integrate this into your day.
I love it. It's a great story, a great small business story. Max Blessin, the founder and CEO of Joy Tea. talking to us today in River Forest on Lake Street as the cars whiz by us outside of Keystone Park. Good luck with everything. What you're doing tastes great, and I'm excited to see what happens in the future.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming by.
In December of 2023, on Outside the Loop number 894, I spoke with Layla Wills. She's the executive director of the Historical Preservation Society of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. And the Black Panther Party has a rich history in our state when it comes to civil rights and helping the community. Layla was spearheading an effort to commemorate that local history. So right now, let's rewind back to December of 2023 to hear part of my conversation with Layla. And after that, we'll get an update on the latest when it comes to preserving this history. Check it out.
Since the time of the Illinois chapter, which our years of focus are 1968 until 1974, the Illinois chapter, they were still around after 74, but that's when most of their programs started to wane and after severe oppression that they went through with the police. Now, since that, and the FBI, I should say. Now, since that time, if you look at our communities in Chicago, especially the Black communities, at a time there was the Great Migration, which simultaneously was white flight, and then we have redlining and all these other things that happen. But now, in this day and age, we have a lot of neighborhoods that have changed and are changing, gentrification and all kinds of other changes in the community. And a lot of our old history is being wiped away. And so our young people don't, to me, I think they need more of a sense of identity when they're going through their communities to understand that there were people here and a lot of activity and movements. And I'll just say one more thing is that the three main properties of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, they don't exist anymore. The headquarters on the west side, 2350 West Madison, the south side office, 4233 South Indiana, and the medical center, 3850 West 16th Street. Those are all gone. They're all, one is a Walgreens parking lot, and the other are just two empty lots. And that's why we want to preserve what we can that's left and get markers at some of the places that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, and we'll talk about your efforts to preserve some of these properties, because there are many physical places that are still around that are, you know, in terms of the history here, really remarkable and can serve as a reminder of what has come before. And I know that you've spent a lot of time looking at this history, and I said before that it's complicated, and it's complicated for a few reasons. First of all, just the story of race is very complicated in Chicago and across the nation. But at the same time here, we're talking about the 1960s, the FBI was planting disinformation. There was the counterintelligence program when it comes to the Black Panther Party. So looking at this history, how do you sift through all that to properly tell the story?
Well, we've been working at this for 3 years. The challenge with what we're doing is to tell the story in an academic way. We've had several written drafts of it, and it has to be written in an academic way, which was very challenging to write something in a dispassionate kind of way when we do know a lot of things that occurred. And when you talk about the FBI, it was during one of the court cases where the FBI informant was revealed to the court, who had given the FBI the map of where Chairman Fred was sleeping inside of that apartment, which led to him being assassinated. So it is complicated, but it's a lot of research. And I've read the FBI files, and more are being revealed. And we just try to stick with the facts, and the facts just cannot be disputed because it's in the FBI's own words. The gang intelligence unit from the Chicago Police Department, they have records that are in the Chicago History Museum, and yeah, it's difficult, but the history is there for us to mark. You know, the research is there.
Yeah, and you've been focusing on preserving these structures, in some cases, these areas. I know there are a few churches on this list, but really trying to create some kind of landmark situation related to the Black Panthers. In other words, there are these different sites across Chicago and really, I mean, in other parts of Illinois as well. And so can you tell us exactly what the goal is here? What are you working on? I know you said you were trying to sort of write this academic history, but what's the end goal here?
So what we're doing is we're landmarking the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. We are creating a what is called a thematic listing with the state of Illinois and the National Park Service. So I usually use some kind of comparison. If we were going to say 1800 schoolhouses from the 1800s in Illinois, right? We want to landmark those. And so they may be scattered throughout the state as the Black Panther sites are. But when you connect them all under the work in programs, they do tell the story of the Illinois chapter.
That clip from Outside the Loop number 894 from December of 2023. So here's an update on this story. The Tribune reported earlier this week, quote, a marker with the Black Panthers logo was unveiled July 26th, launching the Black Panther Party Heritage Trail in Illinois, the first marker of over a dozen sites that commemorate local party history. The trail will serve as an educational tool featuring 13 Chicago sites where black and gold markers will be placed. While the trail continues to be built, the inaugural expanse of markers placed into sidewalks or affixed to buildings runs from Peoria through Chicago to Rockford, end quote. I think this is great. As the telling of history has come under attack recently, this is a bit of good news, so let's celebrate it. Occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
You are broken-hearted. I am just a friend in your eyes.
Once again, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of Steve Krakow, who is the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader and online at chicagoreader.com. He's also a local musician, music historian, and artist. And this person I've definitely never heard of because he was doing a lot behind the scenes and some performance as well. But this story, it's got Chicago, it's got soul and funk, it's got karate. It's the story of Billy Hinton. And Steve, this guy was really something else.
I would classify his music as pretty obscure. If people were going to talk about him, yes, it would probably be a his rather impressive martial arts career. He was like a seventh degree black belt or something, and he could also, write a nice tune, and he was in the military. He's just one of these guys, mostly a good carpenter, just seems like one of these guys who like kind of could do, anything he set his mind to,
It's an amazing story. Billy Hinton, born in January of 1950 in Chicago. He's on the South Side. He grows up attending Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church on the South Side. I mean, this is amazing. He goes at a young age. He goes to Francis Parker High School in Lincoln Park. He graduates in 68 and he goes into the Navy. So like, that's something that you don't hear a ton of. I mean, we've talked about people who served before, but he's really getting into the Navy and martial arts.
Yeah, I mean, he learned to be like an electrician in the Navy. He was on a submarine. I think he got all kinds of skills. And then, sort of started picking up on martial arts and getting a little bit of training in that as well. And, developing an interest in it. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So he comes back. He's discharged honorably from the Navy in 1971. And he comes back here and he just starts racking up degrees. I mean, he gets a degree in sociology from Northeastern University, two master's degrees from University of Chicago. Okay. And he's a plumber. He's a carpenter. He's still doing martial arts. So
it's like kind of like, what doesn't he do? It's really, I call him kind of a superhero in the intro, and I'd say he might qualify, he's pretty close. It's like, you'd want him in your corner for sure.
For sure. You want this guy on your side if you're alley and some ruffians there. Look, we haven't even talked about the music yet, but he launches his own record label, Loretta Records, in the mid-1970s. And I said that he's kind of behind the scenes here. So he's doing a lot of work in the business end. But tell us about how he's getting into music locally.
Yeah, it seems like, I'm not sure if he sang gospel in church, but it was a very musical church that he went to. They, broadcast on the radio and had their own songs and such. So, I'm not totally sure what kind of musical upbringing he had, but pretty concurrently to his martial arts career in the early 70s, he supposedly started this band called Beige. Not much record of their early days. And then he also started his own label, Loretta, his own DIY label. I'm assuming with money he was making from winning these martial arts championships, at the same time, and he was competing, and all that, and winning at the same time. So seemed like that wasn't enough, so he starts a small, it's a small label, but still it's cool that he started it. And the first thing we know of is Beige finally put out a record on his label in the early 80s. And that was definitely his soul group.
Right. So he is kind of, again, behind the scenes here. He is performing, we think, a little bit. I mean, it's amazing how much we don't know. And, you and I have talked about artists and bands that really go back into the 30s and even the 20s, and there it's understandable, you don't know a lot about these bands, but this is, in the 70s and 80s, and we still don't quite know what's going on. We know he's writing stuff, but how does he get, well-known, right? Because he's kind of playing this behind-the-scenes role, a little bit of performing. What's putting him on the map?
Well, like I said, he's kind of obscure. So I think to the mainstream, in a way, unless you were a big karate fan, not that much really put him on the musical map. That said, there's a little sort of posthumous love. I mean, these are obscure records we're talking about that sell for hundreds of dollars now. Wow. Because they were in such small pressings, and there are people who for lack of a better term, they call it modern soul. And it's a collectible genre. And those records can be as sort of, pressed by the band, sold at gigs, very minimal distribution. That's what makes something rare, you know. And especially when it's a genre that's sort of coveted by people. So soul music is just any generation has like legions of fans. So yeah, you know, they're sort of obscure records that not a ton is really known about. And unfortunately, Hinton passed away, you know, so we can't really ask him. And again, even like kind of cruising around for information about him, I found some memoriams, you know, for him when he passed away. And a lot of it focused on his karate career because it was very successful, you know, and he was clearly a badass, you know, in that world. But that said, if you're like a modern soul music head, you're like into these records, but information is sort of low on the ground. That said, you know, I'm sort of looking on the labels of these records and I can see, oh, wow, he recorded in Hedden West in Schaumburg, which it was actually a very acclaimed studio that this fellow Ian Burgess recorded at, who later on would record bands like Naked Raygun and Big Black and all these. So he was very actually more important to the punk scene. You start to see all the connections, you know, with other music and that, oh, wow, these are good sounding records. And that said, so when he finally, the Beige record does sound pretty good from 1981 and this arranger guy, Frank Derrick Jr.'s on it, who seems like he worked with all these sort of heavyweight people. But his solo record, it has a following. And he sort of did this single off of it, A Challenge, which has been sampled and it's currently being on compilations in the last like 10 years and stuff. So it's almost like a rediscovery of sorts.
Yeah, that comes out in 1984, A Challenge. And during the 1980s, as you write here, Billy Hinton, he only puts out two more records, both on the Loretta label. And he is continuing to teach martial arts, which I think is really cool, at the University of Chicago from 89 until 1996. Then he's going to teach this at Stanford. I mean, this guy is like going to some powerhouses here.
If this guy had a hit record, you know, he would have had everything, you know, going for him. I mean, he did a second record and recorded like five studios. It's recorded, you know, he recorded Paul Serrano's studio, super famous guy, recorded so much amazing stuff, you know. And then he kind of dipped in the 80s. He tried, you could tell he tried to sort of evolve with the times, and he did this last single called Dog, 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 Dogged It Out. And it's like, proto house. You can hear house music in it. You hear there's like sampling going on, you know, in a sort of primitive 1987 way, you know, but you hear it and you're like, wow, you know, like dude evolved with the times as well, or, you know, tried. But, you know, that said, it seems like he sort of took a break from music and focused on the martial arts until like maybe the 2000s. And then he's prolific again. And I think maybe it was probably the advent of CDs. You know, it made things a lot easier for people. And all of a sudden he put out like four CDs in the 80s and in the 2000s.
Wow. So he is this karate master. He gets back into the music groove in the 2000s, Billy Hinton here. And he is also writing a ton. I mean, I think we've mentioned this, but just to emphasize, he's really doing a lot of writing, some performing. But you mentioned this, he passes away in 2009. He dies of cancer. So, I mean, just taken kind of before his time. But really, he's, like you said, he's kind of going through this resurgence, I suppose, appearing on some other compilations.
Yeah, this pretty cool comp called Real Sound of Chicago, Underground Disco from the Windy City. And there is definitely like a sort of, you know, post-disco element in his stuff. Was put together by the Southside shop called Mr. Peabody for a UK label. And again, we've talked about it before. Sometimes overseas in the UK in particular, they appreciate our soul music more than we do. And these artists, you know, they'll have a little more of a following. Like I'd say a large part of that sort of modern new soul sort of, love and scene is in the UK for sure, in Europe. So, you know, like, his legend has probably only grown. And, you know, I spotted him in this book that Numero Group just put out, called Soul Music of Illinois, 732 pages. Dante Carfagno, kind of an old bud of mine. We worked at the record store together for a second and such. He put together this thing, and it's like a reference. It's a two-volume reference book. It's not like biography, reminiscent. No. This is like guides to labels. This is what the label looked like. Here's some album covers. Here's some rare promo photos. It is basically for the serious. And, you know, I had to go for it. This is like an investment for my whatever. But yeah, I saw that picture of that album cover. Billy Hinton in his karate robes. He's surrounded by like eight beautiful women all sort of like, you know, gazing at him. And I'm like, wow, okay, this has a story. I was hooked right away. And he did. I knew it, you know?
Wow, Billy Hinton, he is a musician, he's a writer, he's a karate master, and the legacy.
Label owner, carpenter, electrician, four-degree master's degrees. Wish I could have met him. This is definitely one of those guys who would have blown my mind, you know?
Well, as you say in your piece, where there's a will, there's a way. And Hinton proved it. I think that is a nice way to go out here. The story of Billy Hinton in this week's Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader and online at chicagoreader.com. Steve Krakow is the author of that strip, and he also does a hand drawing of whoever he's profiling. So Billy Hinton, you got him, and I think you nailed it. And I'm looking at that picture right now of him surrounded by like 25 women in his karate outfit. So Steve, let's just take that out, that image in our brains, and I think that'll carry us.
You know, the album is called Hard and Soft, and I think that kind of says it all. There's, you know, to get by in this world, you got to have a tough side. And then there's a tender side that appreciates a soulful ballad.
And that will do it. Outside the Loop, show number 982 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio today. I hope you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.